Welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Tuesday, May 26th, 2015. I'm your host, Scott Burton. On today's show, we'll talk about bridge builders with Sherry Patterson and Alaska's First Lady Donna Walker. We'll learn about this Friday's Hearthside Authors Cruise. Musician Dan Kirkwood will be here to highlight his Wednesday night concert. And we'll talk with the Stevens Puppet Team. Those interviews, National Native News, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note Music, and more, right here on a Juno Afternoon.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A First Nations leader in British Columbia says there will be no approval for pipeline projects in the province until Aboriginal conditions are met. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, that means not until First Nations are consulted and satisfied that their land rights and the environment are protected.
Grand Chief Stuart Phillips says energy companies, along with the federal government in Ottawa, have ignored the rights of First Nations people and their concerns, especially when proposing natural resource projects. Phillips says First Nations have long held that they have the constitutional and legal right to defend the environmental integrity of their territories, and he says Aboriginal title and rights and everything they represent are not for sale. He says First Nations are not opposed to pipelines in theory, but...
Under the current lack of environmental standards, the Harper government did a very effective job of completely gutting all environmental regulatory oversight with omnibus legislation, and has certainly shown complete disregard for the environmental concerns and the natural values of British Columbia.
Grand Chief Phillip also had high praise for the recent move by the Lac Qualams First Nation to turn down a more than $1 billion deal that would have given consent for a liquefied natural gas project. An overwhelming number of the 3,700-member First Nation voted against the proposal because of environmental and cultural concerns. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
Alaska's farthest north communities could better adjust to climate change if hunting and fishing rules become more flexible. That's according to the state's Arctic policy expert, who addressed the Native American Fish and Wildlife Society's convention recently in Juneau. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
Craig Fleener is Alaska Governor Bill Walker's special assistant on Arctic policy. The Gwich'in Athabascan from the village of Fort Yukon says northern Native people had the ability to adapt before Western-style government took over.
1,000 years ago, if the caribou didn't come, you killed a moose. If the caribou that should have come to your community 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, 1 week ago, today, weren't there, well, you harvested them next week.
But most state and federal hunting and fishing rules only allow harvests of particular species at specific times. That's a problem for many indigenous people. It's worse in the Arctic, where warming is faster and more extreme than in other parts of the world. Fleener says northern residents are seeing changes in populations and migration routes caused by climate change. He says more regulations defining seasons and bag limits need to be adaptable.
We don't do it enough. It's very tough, especially with rigid management structures that we have, but I think that's something we really have to focus on.
Fleener urged tribal and other representatives at the Native American Fish and Wildlife Society convention to educate themselves about climate change and Arctic issues. For National Native News, I'm Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau.
The Hopi tribe is getting congressional support in an effort to stop an upcoming Paris auction, which the tribe says includes Native American objects. Tribal leaders and two U.S. Arizona representatives are set to discuss plans during a press conference Wednesday in Phoenix. The Hopi tribe is requesting federal agencies, including the U.S. Department of Justice and the FBI, take immediate action to halt the Eve Auction House event scheduled on June 1st. The Arizona tribe is also requesting the voluntary return of objects identified to be of Hopi origin to the tribe. This has been an ongoing battle by the tribe to stop the sale of Hopi sacred items from being sold at auctions and lost to private collectors. The Senate Committee on Indian Affairs is holding a field hearing in Anadarko, Oklahoma, Wednesday. Witnesses on the oversight hearing, Advancing Economic Success in Indian Country, includes business leaders in banking, construction, and technology. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. With funding from ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
Support by the Association of American Indian Physicians. Colon cancer is the second leading cause of cancer death in American Indians 50 and over. For yourself, your family, and our community, get screened. Info at AmericanIndianCancer.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Tuesday, May 26th, 2015. Scott Burton, your host, and joining me now in the studio are a couple of the founding members of Bridge Builders, Alaska's First Lady Donna Walker. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And also Ms. Sherry Patterson. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
You're also the president of the Black Awareness Association, is that correct?
I am, yes.
Okay. Well, it's an honor to have you both on the show. Which one of you would like to start and tell us about the origins of Bridge Builders? Because it's a really cool story.
Well, I first became involved in Bridge Builders, I think, back in the Genesis in Anchorage when there was a lot of gang violence. And the mayor at that time, Mayor Rick Maestrom, put together a task force on how to deal with this. And one of the things that they did, and this was the only part I was involved in at the time, was they did a pulpit exchange between the large Caucasian Presbyterian Church and the Shiloh Baptist Church, of which Ms. Patterson's father is the pastor. And Dr. Patterson and his choir came to our church, and our pastor and choir went to their church, and it was just such a wonderful celebration in our church. I will never forget it to this day. I would say it was probably the best Sunday in that church. And so just it started, I think, opening the door for just a growing appreciation of different cultures. And, of course, Anchorage, as we know in a recent article, an Anchorage paper, is that Anchorage is truly one of the most diverse cities in the country. And so from there, Mayor Maestrom got together all the cultural groups that were represented in Anchorage at that time, and, did things like potlucks and gatherings, and so they formalized into this group called Bridge Builders Anchorage, and so now some 20 years later they are still incredibly active, and in more recent years my husband Bill Walker and I have been more involved and participated in all of their events and just see, what the benefit of that in a community. And more recently, there were sort of a hate crime with the Sudanese in Anchorage. And so when I got to Juno, I thought, I wonder, and I had thought before then that taking this Bridge Builder concept statewide would be one of my initiatives. And so started testing the waters here in Juno, and that's how Sherry and I crossed paths.
And Sherry, you live here in Juneau, is that correct?
I do, yes. Juneau is my home for the last 28 years.
Tell us a little bit about the Black Awareness Association. Is this a statewide organization? I mean, I know it's national and it can be. Are you associated with that here in the city or statewide? Tell us about that.
We are actually a part of the Martin Luther King Foundation Anchorage.
Okay.
There are different chapters throughout the state. We fall under that heading, and we just sort of renamed ourselves Black Awareness Association here in Juneau. Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then, let's see, so through your father and his church, and I assume you attended that as well.
I did.
You got connected here with Mrs. Walker.
Yes.
Tell me about why something like Bridge Builders is important. Why is it important to you?
It's very important. When I was first contacted, I was quite interested And the first thing I did was called him, and he said, yes, go and just listen and see what you think, and if you think that it's a good thing, go for it. He was involved initially, and he said he eventually had to step back a little bit with so much on his plate, but he was involved for several years, and he absolutely endorsed it, and of course, here I am.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Great. And you have an event coming up, Taste of the Nations. I like it. Yes. Tell us about that.
You go ahead.
On Saturday, this Saturday, May 30th, beginning at 2 o'clock p.m. at the Hub, which is located at Juno Christian Center, we will be celebrating our diversity here in our community with several cultural groups. Being on board, bringing samples of their food, and there will be entertainment with songs, dancing, drumming, whatever that culture wants to display that day. Each group will have a booth or a table to display artifacts or some kind of art. It's just going to be a festive occasion, and we're really looking forward to it.
And remind us where that is exactly, the Hub and the Juno Christian Center.
Across from Fred Meyer.
Okay.
It's easily found. It's on the far end of the church located there.
Okay. Sounds good. And what time does it start?
2 o'clock p.m. And it's open to the whole community. It's family friendly.
Free.
And it's free. Yes, absolutely. And come and just get a taste of what the different cultures have to offer. I love diversity because, you know, we are different and we have a lot to offer each other. I think when a community blends in, it's very boring. I look forward to this.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Mrs. Walker, I read in the piece that Melissa Griffiths did for the Juno Empire, nice piece there. Going back to that day at church, when the two churches came together, you said things got to rocking and rolling that day, and we loved it. Mm-hmm. Are you sort of trying to do that again with these groups and these meetings?
Well, I think by that it was just seeing like a totally different, you know, service format,
exactly.
Type of music, type mm-hmm. of preaching, and just really appreciating that difference. That's just one small example mm-hmm. of what the different groups have to offer one another. I think from my own perspective, I was spent the first 12 years of my life in a racially segregated South and saw at the height of all of the problems there. Remember, you know, the first few days of integration and how traumatic that was. And knowing in my heart those things were not right. And then moving to Hawaii and seeing the diverse cultures and, you know, not that there aren't issues, but much more a celebration and appreciation of people who are different from us. And then, of course, you know, then moving to Alaska, raising four kids at West High School, which is like number three of most diverse high schools in the United States, and we've got Bartlett and East, number one and two. And seeing that background that my children grew up with their, you know, all their close friends, it's just like a rainbow of, you know, God's creation. And that's who was in my living room and rec room on the weekends, and I think how it could be rather than, you know, all of the issues that we sometimes let divide us. And so just wanting to take that, and then, of course, yeah, I could just keep on going, but then, of course, the whole unity theme with the Byron Mallott and Bill Walker, and what a celebration that has been. We need more of that statewide, and so that's the hope, is that we'll spark that.
Sure. Ms. Patterson, in that same article, you alluded to there still being challenges for minorities here in Juneau. Could you tell us about a few of those?
Oh, wow. Well, if you visit our schools, our children are very few and far between. And there, even the curriculum, there's no such thing. There is Alaska Native Studies, I know that. But I've been in Juneau for 28 years, and there's no African-American studies to be thought of Why? You know, I'm not sure about Filipino studies. I don't know. And we have a large Filipino community here. That would be great. And just in the adults, there's very few blacks here in this community, but we're here. And any time that something of this nature comes along, I certainly jump on board because I'm about unity. I'm about harmony. And we are different. We have a lot to offer each other. And I would love to see a community that would come together and just start appreciating each other for who we really are and not trying to make me like you or you like me, because we're different and we have so much to offer and we can learn from each other, and it would be such a much better place.
I think that's how I feel, too. Just being Alaskans and Americans is what unites us, but being all those other things are what makes us interesting.
Yes.
You know.
Yes. Yes.
Well, we can get started this Saturday from 2 to 4 out at the Hub at the Juno Christian Center. Bridge Builders, it sounds like a wonderful program.
Yes.
Thank you both so much for sharing this
You're
with
welcome.
Us today.
And they can contact us at bridgebuilders, JNU, at gmail.com. Or like us on Facebook.
Sounds great, Mrs. Patterson. Thank you.
Thank you
so
for inviting
much today.
Us. We appreciate it.
First Lady Donna Walker, it's been an honor, a pleasure, both of you. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
What we need to survive together.
This October, voters will elect assembly and school board members. I'm Mark Wheeler, and I served in the assembly from 2000 to 2005. Holding that office was a life-changing experience. You can do it, too. Come to a free workshop on how to run for election on Saturday, June 6th. Register at junolwv.org. Space is limited, so don't wait. There's no better way to give back to our community than serving in public office. Brought to you by CBJ and the League of Women Voters.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Tuesday, May 26, 2015. It's about 20 minutes past the hour. Scott Burton, your host, and I have been joined in the studio by Brenda Weaver, the owner of Hearthside Books. Welcome, Brenda.
Thank you.
Nice to have you on the show today. So you have your author's cruise coming up this Friday night.
We do.
Tell us about it. Tell us about this event. It's the sixth annual, right?
It is. Debbie Reifenstein and Susan Hickey, who were the former owners, started this cruise and has become very, very popular. We invite authors who are local who have had been published in the past year. And so this year, 13 authors and a few of their illustrators are joining us.
Sounds like fun. And you've been on one of these before, right?
I was. Last year I was on when Susan and Debbie introduced me as the new owner and announced their retirement. And it was filled with gasps and congratulations.
Tell us about the scene. What's it look like? Where are the writers situated? Do you know people mingle and talk with the authors and illustrators?
Well, we board at 5:30 at Stater Harbor, and we take off right at 6. And the authors, we generally reserve a little bit towards the front of the Allen Marine catamaran so that they're able to get up and sit down easily and get up and chat when it's their time to be highlighted. Other than that, once we take off for a while and everybody gets a chance to chat with whomever and move around, and we have some food aboard, we have a wine tasting, and of course you can purchase other drinks through Allen Marine there at their little bar. And we'll have books on board for purchase if they want them, or people can bring their own books if they've already got them and get them personalized by the authors. But then about half hour, 45 minutes into the cruise, then we introduce authors individually, and they get an opportunity to stand up and give us a little backstory and get to know them a little bit.
Okay, it sounds like fun. So you've owned the store for a year now. Take us back. What inspired you to buy the store? Are you a lover of books?
Well, Hearthside's always been one of my favorite places to shop here in Juneau, and yes, I am a lover of books. I was one of those kids that would be found in the library or anywhere. I had worked at the University of Alaska Fairbanks bookstore for several years prior to going back to school, and I was a teacher and a reading specialist. And I thought long and hard and did tons of research and then talked myself into changing careers.
All right. And have you been enjoying it?
I have. It's been a blast, a great learning experience, great learning curve, nothing like that to keep your brain young and keep you alive and energy going.
Okay. You have a great list of authors and illustrators. Tell us about some of them.
Well, first I'll start off with Jeff Brown is going to be on with Real Alaska. He and his daughter are going to be on board. So we have quite a variety. So we have the magazine covered. We've got children's books covered with Sarah Asper Smith and her husband, Mitch Watley, who is the illustrator, as well as Hannah Lindoff and her illustrators, Nobu, are going to be on board. And then we have Ishmael Hope for poetry with his new book, Cartesians of Flounder Hill. We've got Stuart Archer Cohen coming on in the fiction category. Kathy Connors has a new edition of her Roadside Geology. Kim Hecox has a new book that was just released. Rhythm of the Wild is about Denali. Ben Huff has a photography book about the Dalton Highway. It's just a beautifully done book. Mary Wilson and Kathy Hooker have The Singer in the Stream, which is a new edition that has come out. Mary Lou King and her 90-plus short walks are going to be aboard because now I guess it's about 120 in there or something like that. Let's see. Heather Lindy is coming over from Haynes. She's got Find the Good, which is a very wonderful read. And she'll be on the radio. We're also doing a signing the next day downtown. Let's see. Who am I forgetting? Kathy Ruddy and Peter Metcalf covers the social science and the history of the Alaska Native Brotherhood. And let's see. I'm trying to think.
Mary Multi-genre. Wilson.
Yes, quite. I mean, we go from kids to poetry to geology and social sciences and fiction. And
sounds like fun. That's this Friday night.
It is.
And yeah, where do folks get more information?
They can go to Hearthside Books, either on the front in Franklin Street store or in the Nugget Mall. They can purchase tickets. It's only $55. It's a really bargain for a whale-watching cruise for 3 hours of fun and entertainment and food, and get to sit up and chat with your local celebrities.
Yeah, not to mention maybe some whales and beautiful scenery and all that stuff.
And last year, the authors were so gracious and didn't mind competing with the whales because they were out in force, and then we got to go over to the island where the sea lions have kind of taken over and get serenaded by them as well.
All right, Brenda Weaver, owner of Hearthside Books, talking about the author's cruise this Friday night, Stater Harbor, 5:30. Tickets available at Hearthside Books. Anything we're missing, Brenda?
Get the tickets while they're available, because we do sell out, and they're selling fast.
All right, Brenda, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, the 26th of May, 2015. It's the birthday of the horror writer Robert William Chambers, born Brooklyn, 1865, came from a prominent family, studied art in New York, exhibited paintings in Paris, and then decided that writing was his calling instead, and he published a collection of horror stories, or, as they were called at the time, weird stories, the book entitled The King in Yellow, which was extremely popular, and Chambers continued to write bestsellers, some romances, some horror stories, working every day from 10 to 6 in a New York office that even his own family didn't know the address. It's the birthday of the documentary photographer Dorothea Lange, born in Hoboken in 1895. Contracted polio when she was a kid, developed a permanent limp as a result, moved to San Francisco. She was taking photographs of well-to-do people when, during the Depression, she started taking photographs of men on breadlines and striking workers and the homeless. She's now remembered for her photograph of the Dust Bowl wife, entitled Migrant Mother, taken in 1936. It's the birthday of John Wayne, born Marion Morrison in Winterset, Iowa, 1907. He got into the movie business by way of the prop department. He was a scenery mover, and that's how he got to know the director John Ford, who started giving him bit parts in his movies. He became a star in John Ford's movie Stagecoach, 1939. Made many movies with John Ford, the cavalry movies like Fort Apache and Rio Grande, the post-war movies like The Searchers and The Man Who Shot Liberty Valance. And it's the birthday of the jazz trumpeter Miles Davis, born in Alton, Illinois, 1926. Grew up well-to-do in East St. Louis. His father was a dental surgeon. Family had a ranch in Arkansas, where the boy learned to ride horses. Moved to New York, 1944, to study at Juilliard, and then fell in with Charlie Parker and Dizzy Gillespie. When Gillespie left Parker's band, it was Miles Davis who filled in. It was Miles Davis's album, Birth of the Cool, in 1956, that heralded the beginning of the cool jazz movement. Developed a heroin habit in the early 50s, kicked it in 1954. In the late 60s, started introducing some electric guitar and piano into the records. Moved increasingly toward funk and rock and roll in the double album Bitches Brew in 1970. Here's a poem for today by Wyatt Prunty, entitled Bad dog. He was a bad dog, and he did not care. When nature called, he stood and lifted there. He chewed socks, rugs, and shoes, the rungs of chairs. Put on a leash, he locked his legs. He would not budge. Asleep, he barked and chased what was not there. Awake, he barked and chased what was not there. When danger knocked, he shrugged. I see him still that way, facing the door, floppy and kind, wet nose against the glass, or scratching over ears where going bald, then sniffing round to find just where he'd lifted earlier, the which he did just once more when, at last, nature called and he followed. Bad Dog, a poem by Wyatt Prunty from his collection Couldn't Prove, Had to Promise, published by Johns Hopkins University Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Lumosity, introducing a 10-minute fit test to challenge memory, attention, and problem-solving to calculate baseline scores. Learn more at lumosity.com. And by Progressive Insurance, working to make progress for more than 75 years. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Hi, this is Dan Kirkwood of Goldwing. Join me, Dan DeSlover on bass, Ben Higdon on guitar, and Clay Good on drums for a night of original space country tunes. It's Alaska Originals, free on Wednesday, May 27th at 7 p.m. at 360 in the KTOO building. Info at ktoo.org. All the crimes forgiven
me. You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Tuesday, May 26th, 2015. Scott Burton, your host, and it's about 30 minutes after the hour. Now in the studio with me is musician Dan Kirkwood. Welcome, Dan.
Scott, thank you so much for having me.
It's nice to have you here. You're going to be playing for Alaska Originals at 360 tomorrow night at 7 o'clock.
I can't tell you how excited I am. This is fabulous.
I'm very excited, too. I think a lot of us know you maybe as a solo song singer-songwriter, but we also know you as Space Country, and your new band is called Goldwing.
Yeah, absolutely. I had kind of gotten back into playing guitar after college and started tooling around by myself, and the whole time feeling like I was having a lot of fun. I was really learning a lot about songwriting by playing by myself, but then wanting the full sound of a band. I think playing by myself really kind of made me come up with more interesting hooks or become a better accompanist to myself on guitar. But the full sound of a band, I think, was something that I really picked up from living in Juneau, where you want to entertain folks. You want to make it worthwhile to come out and hear some music.
Interesting. If people aren't familiar with your first major project, Space Country, how would you describe that? And then we're going to talk about Goldwing here in a minute.
Sure. Well, Space Country, you know, kind of started as a joke to describe the music. Like, what would be the best way to describe this kind of mix of, you know, it's like a folky singer-songwriter who maybe now became a little bit more country, but I've always been really into bands like Blitz and Trapper and always into a little bit of electronica. And gosh, I'll confess, Steely Dan, you know, I want it to sound cool. I want it to move. And so when I started making the demos that became Space Country, we started experimenting with a lot of synthesizers, with a lot of keyboards, and tones that I just think are really, really cool. So that did naturally evolve into the sound we have with Goldwing, but that evolution was just a product of the musicians we have playing.
Okay. Good answer. So you brought your guitar with you. You want to pick us a tune so we can get a feel for what you do?
Yeah, sure. I thought the tune that I'd play today, I'll confess, it's just my favorite song I've ever written, I guess. I'm allowed to have a favorite. This is a song called Orbit. And Orbit was written kind of at the end of a long and really wonderful relationship, and also written right after seeing the movie Gravity with Sandra Bullock, where the astronaut tumbles off into space. And I thought the image of her tumbling off into outer space was very comparable in feeling. And so I got home from that movie and I wrote this tune.
I see her standing across the ocean in glowing orbit, the planets in motion. I know, yeah, I know. And I'll take my lessons from the books of history. Won't read ahead, I want to keep the mystery alive. Yeah, alive. I want sad luck on my side, yeah. I might get lucky again. I'm up in orbit and I hope that we collide, and I'll get lucky again. And I'll be your cowboy in terms of phrases. Now walk the straight lines in the wild places I go, that I go. And I'll be your spaceman if you turn on that starlight. Take me out dancing and I will keep you up all night. Yeah, all night. I want that luck on my side, oh yeah. I want that luck on my side. I want that luck on my side. I might get lucky again. I'm up in orbit and I hope that we collide, and I'll get lucky again.
Okay, Dan Kirkwood there with Orbit. Thank you, Dan.
Thanks, Scott.
Sounded great. So tomorrow night you'll be playing with your new band, Goldwing. Tell us about who's in it and how fun it is to play with them.
Oh, so this is a crew of guys that I started assembling after Folkfest in last year, so 2014. And just a couple guys from around town who actually played in a band together here where they were in high school. Dan DeSlover and Ben Higdon, and they're both just fabulously professional and talented and creative musicians. And I think that the songwriting has really evolved just from the little inputs that they bring to each session we do, and they're incredibly fun to play with. And then the most recent addition to the band was consummate Juno professional Clay Good, you know, a drummer folks see around town quite a bit because he's just got a passion for playing. And it's really changed the sound from something that was kind of, in these demos originally, very driving. Just kind of four on the floor, beat-oriented pop songs with a bit of a country flavor, to something that just has, you know, I think thanks to them, a much more interesting and kind of dark feel. And so I hope that that's something that we'll get to play around with tomorrow night, since the atmosphere at a place like At 360 gives us the opportunity to really pay attention to the sound and maybe be a little bit more experimental and give you some good texture.
Absolutely. And so Danis Lovers on bass, right? And Ben Hignan on electric guitar?
That's right.
Clay on drums. And you play in that acoustic?
I will be playing this acoustic. My my beloved Martin D18 Golden Era. It's I can't help but travel with it everywhere I go.
It looks and sounds really good. And listeners, if you haven't been to an Alaska Originals concert, tomorrow's show is free. It starts at 7. It's probably usually good to get there around 6:30. It's here in the K2 building downstairs. And it'll be a one-hour show, very intimate. The sound in there is really nice. Just about everyone that plays in there remarks on the acoustics, and we'll have some a little bit of sound reinforcement, and we'll be recording for television. And then that will be up on 360 North YouTube and then broadcast forever statewide. You can be part of it, listeners.
I'll dress up for sure, yeah.
It's going to be a lot of fun. Dan, what else should we talk about? Are you going to tell us about song origins tomorrow, I hope, and some other fun stories? And oh, I know what I want you to tell me about. The recent description of Goldwing, songs that you can drive to, am I getting this right, or down at the dark end of a bar, how would you augment that description?
Yeah, I really liked that description that was put together. I won't be able to remember it myself, but songs for the open highway or the dark end of the bar is what I remember off the poster. And, yeah, I think trying to capture a little bit of that that sort of sunset on the horizon feel is what we're after, and hoping to give the music just a lot of space so that you can kind of enjoy what everybody brings to it, Dan and Ben. And Clay, and really just let those songs kind of ride.
What does so you do almost exclusively original material? What does this do for you as a person, as an artist? Why is it important for you to write and play?
Yeah. Okay. So I recently read a guy talking about poetry, and he said that the great thing about poetry is that if it's fiction or fact, it doesn't matter. Like if you're writing a novel, you expect it all to be made up. Or if you're telling a biography, it all has to be true. And songwriting falls into that realm that poetry's probably in, where a song like Orbit can be incredibly autobiographical and at the same time can be complete fantasy. So it's a bit selfish in that way. It's probably a bit useful in that way that you can make something like that up. And then it's also incredibly fulfilling because as someone who really enjoys music, I want to make more music. I want there to be more music that I like. And so in a really selfish way, I just try and write songs that speak to me and that I like.
Okay. Good answer. Let's see. We have another tune queued up here off of the Space Country. It's called Borderland. Tell us a little bit about that, and then we'll take her out.
Yeah, this is a song I really like, and I really like this demo from Space Country with the nice texture of the keyboards. And in the sense that you can look at any song as being autobiographical and completely made up, you know, probably all these songs are about me, and I can't hide that. But this was also a song that just kind of came to me reading the news about refugees standing at the border. And so there's an opportunity to maybe selfishly take over their story and to put myself in their shoes.
All right, Dan, are we missing anything? Anything else you want to add?
Just everybody at the show tomorrow if you don't come. So come on down, 7 o'clock, we'll see you there.
All right, Dan, thanks a lot.
The border. drowned out my name. But I've been here for a long, long time, and I've been digging in the dust for a sign of
to a Juno afternoon here on Tuesday, May 26, 2015. Scott Burton, your host, and with me now on the phone is Dan Rayner of the Stevens Puppet Team. Welcome to the show, Dan.
Thanks for having us, Scott. Thank you very much.
Yeah, so you're going to be doing a puppet show at the Mendenhall Library this Thursday at 4 and 6:30. You'll be performing Aladdin, is that correct?
Yes, that is correct. It's going to be Aladdin with hand-carved wooden marionettes.
No kidding. That sounds great. You guys have been to Juno before, right?
Yes, this is our fourth year in a row, our fourth summer, and Juno actually kicks off our Alaska tour.
How did you two, and so you perform with your wife, Zan, is that correct?
Yes, my wife, Zan, is the puppet maker and artist and also performer. But, yes, I do perform with her, and she's amazing.
I bet. Take us back. How did you two get into puppeteering?
Well, it was many years ago. It was 23 years ago, to be exact. And we actually answered an ad in the newspaper in a little town called Elkhart, Indiana. And the people that were that hired us, they were looking for a retired couple to tour a marionette show two states. And so we applied and didn't think we were going to get it, but we did get it. And then we expanded with the help of the previous owners to about three or four states. And then the other owners wanted us to buy them out, so we did. We bought them out. And now we are in 35 states, including Alaska.
I imagine that's a full-time endeavor.
Oh, it is. Absolutely. It's full-time. And that's not only us, we also have other puppeteers on the road that go and do other states while we are not there. But my wife creates all of the marionettes, and we do all of the artwork and things like that. And they go out on the road, and they do the shows.
How many years have you been doing it now?
This is our 23rd year.
Man, you must enjoy it.
Oh, absolutely. You know, a lot of people have to go to work every day, and they just dread having to get up. But for me, and it's just amazing because I get up in the morning, I go, woohoo, I get to do this again. This is awesome.
You know, thinking of all the different kinds of performance art, what is it about marionettes or puppeteering that you like the most?
I like there's a couple of things. Number one, I really like the audience feedback and being able to present our shows for the kids, but having that instant feedback from the kids and they get to come around backstage after the show, and they get to see the marionettes up close. They get to ask questions. I love that. But I also love something that is my wife's passion, which is cultural literacy. She is very passionate about bringing these old fairy tales back in their original form or pretty close to it, because they just don't have them anymore. And the kids nowadays, they don't get to see these original fairy tales. What they see today are, you know, Disney-fied versions of Happily Ever Afters or what have you, which I think Happily Ever After is wonderful. But at the same time, there are, you know, we don't do the Little Mermaid show because the Little Mermaid, well, she dies at the end of that show. But of course, Disney doesn't have their hair dye at the end, but, the original fairy tale did. And we like to do the original fairy tales as much as possible.
Yeah,
and
speaking
with
of
Aladdin.
Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
I'm sorry. With our Aladdin show, the Aladdin story, actually, a lot of people don't know this, it actually took place in China. And so our puppets are Asian looking for this show. And with all of the artwork and what have you that my wife has painted, it's all representative of a very Asian culture. And it's beautiful. Absolutely beautiful.
Well, we're looking forward to seeing it. You know, it all sounds great. What are some of the challenges that you two come across in your tours?
Well, you know, scheduling obviously is a big challenge. But with Alaska, it's been so wonderful because the librarians that we deal with all over the state are so accommodating, and they are so helpful on everything. So that's never a problem here. However, in other states, it's a little bit more of a challenge. You know, a lot of times you'll book a show, but then you won't hear from the librarian or what have you for months on end. And then the show time's coming up, and then you say, oh, yeah, we're supposed to be there next week, and we have a contract for this, what have you. And they go, oh, yeah, that's right. I'll see if we can put you on the schedule. So, I mean, there's a lot of challenges, but also the travel itself is a challenge.
Sure, sure.
And for example, this trip we're going to be doing, oh, I don't know, 8 or 10 flights and ferries and car rentals and things like that. So the logistics of the tour is a challenge. But, you know, we also love having the challenge and being able to accommodate the challenge into our lives. So it's actually lots of fun.
Sure. And I guess it's probably obvious, but it sounds like libraries are your venue of choice. Do you perform in other places too?
We do. Libraries are summer. We do some libraries during the school year, but most of the time it's for their summer reading program. And we do libraries and festivals, and during the school year we do schools, and we also do festivals and some churches. And it just depends on, you know, who wants us. I mean, frankly, one time I performed at the opening of a furniture store. So it's literally just whatever somebody wants and they're willing to have us, then you know, we'll go and perform for them.
Okay. Dan, to close out here, can you give us a little teaser? What should we look for in the story of Aladdin? What's a takeaway?
Oh, of course it's the story of Aladdin and rubbing his magic lamp, and then you meet the genie, and there's all sorts of funny wordplay in the story as well. But also the music in the story is infused into the entire story, and it's just absolutely beautiful. So culturally, the takeaway from it is it's transporting you to another time and another place, but still instilling the values and good things about a fairy tale.
Well, it sounds great. And again, you'll be at the Mendenhall Library this Thursday, and there'll be two shows, one at 4, one at 6:30. Will they both be the same show?
Yes, both be the same show. And can I mention also we have our website, which is at stevenspuppets.com, as well as our Facebook and Twitter, if you just search for Stevens Puppets. And that's Stevens with a V.
All right, Dan. Well, we're looking forward to seeing you on Thursday. Safe travels. Hopefully it'll still be sunny. It's been sunny up here for about a month now, I think, so.
Wonderful. Well, we are looking forward to it very much. Juneau is one of our very favorite cities on the planet, so we are very excited to come up again.
All right, Dan. Thanks a lot. We'll see you soon.
Thank you so much. Take care.
Bye. Thanks for tuning in to a Juneau Afternoon today. Tomorrow, Jamie Waste will be your host, and he'll talk with Carl Broderson about Juneau youth sailing. Rosemary Hagevig and Peggy Metcalf will be here to highlight PEO scholarships. We'll meet members of a ballroom dance group from Idaho and hear about their presentation of Strictly Ballroom. And Amy Houck will be here with details about this year's Fine Arts Camp, that Writer's Almanac, Bird Note Music, and more tomorrow on K2 News Juneau. If you missed the live show, it's also available at 4 at KRNN and online at KTOO.org. And the weather, it is currently 64 degrees at the Juneau Airport. Tonight, rain likely. Haven't said that for a while. Lows around 50. And on Wednesday, rain likely. Highs around 57. North wind 10 miles per hour, shifting to the southwest in the late afternoon. Thursday, partly cloudy. Highs around 64. So maybe I didn't lie to Dan. It will still be sunny by then. And Thursday night through Saturday, partly cloudy. Lows 44 to 50. Stay tuned for the news.